Hour number two on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by BC Liquor until April 26th. Get $5 off Donna Paula Malbec or $3 off Neutral Vodka Soda Lime 12 packs. Visit your nearest BC Liquor location today and enjoy responsibly. An update in the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Washington Capitals have a 1-0 lead on the Montreal Canadiens. Take a guess at who scored the goal, Sat.
Let's see here. Was it the guy who broke Wayne Gretzky's record?
Yeah, that would be correct.
Okay.
Playoff goal number 73 for his career. Alex Ovechkin with the go-ahead goal for the Washington Capitals. 1-0 for them.
But he's probably not catching Gretzky in playoff goals.
Yeah. I think Gretzky had like 50 more playoff goals than he did coming into this this playoff campaign. So
yeah,
but
probably
I think,
not doing
like,
it this year.
If you count up his
he's on pace for it,
yeah,
yeah. Well, I mean,
goal a period.
Yeah, and if they go all the way to the Cup final, then yeah, maybe yeah. He scores 75 goals or 100 goals. Yeah, maybe.
That's not gonna happen.
No,
no.
You don't think so?
Yeah, no. I don't think they get out of the second round.
Yeah, ye of little faith.
Would be a fun story, though. Ovechkin with the goalless right now.
Listen,
between
Kiefer Sherwood, who's clearly the superior goal scorer, couldn't score 70 in 82 games.
No.
You think Ovechkin's going to score 70 in 20?
Probably not. Winnipeg and St. Louis are goalless right now in the first period as well. You can watch that one on CBC. The Habs and Capitals are on Sportsnet. Edmonton Oilers and LA Kings coming up later tonight, and also the Stars and Avalanche get game two going of their series. All right, let's get to the open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yeah, it's the open on Canuck Central, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The latest is the end of season news conference, and there's a lot to parse through here. And the one thing we'll talk more about Pettersson and Hughes and all that. Rick Tocchet. It was kind of weird today, was it not? At least for me, the way they're kind of talking about, hey, we're having meetings every day with Tocchet, and they seem somewhat confident that a decision is coming later this week. They seem confident a decision is coming, but not necessarily that it's going to be a yes for Rick Tocchet remaining with the Vancouver Canucks, though they are operating as if Rick Tocchet, Adam Foote, and the coaching staff is coming back, and they're not even entertaining the idea of what's to come should Rick Tocchet say, no, I'm good, later this week.
Yeah, it's very clear that the organization wants him to stay.
Yeah.
And it's very clear that they've made every indication publicly that they want the coach to be here, and they're operating as if he's coming back. And Tocchet was operating as if he's coming back for the most part when he met with the media on Friday, but he's not back yet. And for all the positives or negatives, however you want to view it, I think you could view the press conference today any way you want. You can look at it and say, hey, it's positive because they said a lot of good things about Tocchet. They both mentioned that they're not going to hold them to the team option out of respect. And, they presented optimism. And, Patrick, when we asked him, said he is optimistic about getting something done. And I mentioned today with Halford and Bruff, and I've been saying this on the show, that internally there has been lots of optimism recently about getting something done. And something I was told today was, if he was close to not coming back, I think that would have been made clear. So this is kind of it looks like a negotiation about what's the contract going to look like. I don't know if there's anything else that Tocchet needs to know and hear or learn about club direction.
Yeah. I mean, they basically laid out their plan for the summer for us today.
So I'm sure he knows all those things, and I understand he does. So this simply is a negotiation about compensation here.
Yeah, and as this text says, Tocchet's stalling. He's clearly seeing his options. I mean, maybe it gets him a stronger bargaining position. Another head coaching job opened up today in Seattle. Obviously, Philly has been hot on his tail. There's a lot of connections there with Philadelphia. The New York Rangers job is open. So the Anaheim Ducks job is now open as well. So, yeah, that doesn't hurt Tocchet's negotiating position, but
no.
It can't just be down to dollars and cents. because, well, I mean, if I would imagine Philadelphia might be able to put the best offer on the table dollars and cents wise for Rick Tocchet, but
well, yeah,
I just, everything we've been told is that it's not, it doesn't come down strictly to the dollars and cents of it all.
No, but I think the juncture of the negotiation is about what the contract's going to look like.
Yes.
And I'm not saying he's not going to sign.
He still wants fair value.
Or I'm not going to sit here and say one way or another, like what Rick Tocchet wants, cause I don't know.
Yeah.
But I do know that he's a player who understands, or who, he's a former player and a coach who understands his own value. I think he's a guy who obviously is a poker player.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in negotiations, all is fair and you're negotiating.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. If Tocchet truly wants the most money, like it's like, hey, you have to give the most competitive offer, then yeah, it's not going to be Vancouver. But that doesn't mean that, you know, you're not still figuring out the money. You know what I mean? Like, let's say that hypothetically speaking, Tocchet has an ask of $5 million. Again, hypothetically speaking, and he thinks that a team might be willing to offer him five, but the Canucks are offering 4.5.
Yeah,
is he saying screw it? I don't think so. Mm. So I think ballpark, you have to be somewhat close. But I think it's like, okay, I'm willing to take less to be here, but let's figure out how much less. That's the way it seems to me, because I don't disagree with you. I think if you're looking at getting the most money.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's probably going to go be elsewhere. But I do think the negotiation now is about the money. He still has to meet a threshold. Like, he's still not going to take, I don't think, significantly less than what he could get elsewhere.
Well,
right?
And the Canucks can offer something that other teams can't, and that's Quinn Hughes. And getting to
for
coach
2 years.
Yeah. That's getting to coach Quinn Hughes
for 2 more years.
Gives you.
Well, also, you get all the other Hugheses eventually.
Well, yes. You get the brothers Hughes eventually, yeah, all together in one place here in Vancouver.
That's the dream.
Once Jim Rutherford's able to trade for Jack and Luke.
Step one is keeping Rick.
Yeah.
And then step two is trading for Luke and Jack. And then Quinn has no choice.
Sad. I feel like you were talking about this plan not so long ago.
Well, I mean, it was a hostile takeover plan.
We've adjusted the plan. It used to be an RFA thing.
It used to be because Jack Hughes, I mean, Luke Hughes cannot be offer sheeted. So, you know, you can't just force your hand with an offer sheet. But, you know, hostile takeover somehow. What else can we do to squeeze the Devils into trading away the Hughes brothers?
So on the Hughes thing, it was completely unnecessary from Jim Rutherford to say something like that. I do wonder, like, it probably doesn't change anything really in the big picture as far as, like, how it's going to play out with Quinn Hughes.
No.
At the same time, it's just, I don't think it helps the situation at all, or maybe it doesn't give every fan a ton of confidence that Quinn Hughes is long for Vancouver either.
No, I mean, obviously, I think because the organization
boosts your confidence that Quinn Hughes is staying in Vancouver for a lifetime contract beyond this one.
Because the president of the organization did not express confidence that he's going to be here a long time.
Yeah.
He openly mused about the idea of him wanting to play with his brothers. So maybe we have to bring the brothers. Like, he was joking clearly about bringing the brothers here. That still does not save him from tampering.
Yeah.
We'll see what the league says here. It's going to be really fascinating.
He's got to work on his joke delivery a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I get
like when you're a kid and you say something bad, you're like, no, it's just joking. Yeah, it was just a joke.
But no, I mean, it's clear he was joking. Because, I mean, he knows that you can't speak about players from different teams.
But like
he
when knows you're a kid, you still get in trouble.
You get in trouble, right? And he's going to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah. But it doesn't improve your confidence that Quinn Hughes is going to stay.
No.
Again, what it comes down to is next season how the team performs next season.
But to your point, we didn't learn anything new today that we didn't already know.
Yeah.
He brought up the topic of Quinn not being here long term when he spoke to Gary Mason about the direction and if they trade JT, what they have to do and, you know, whether they rebuild or not. And if they rebuild, Quinn's not going to stay here. So he's already spoken about Quinn on two different occasions. Now, this time he was explicitly asked about Quinn Hughes. And he gave an answer on it.
Yeah.
But it's an answer that we already knew they were going to give if they were going to be truthful, which is they don't know the answer to Quinn Hughes, whether he wants to be here long term or not.
He also alluded to it when he spoke about the cost of acquiring a center. When Jim Rutherford said it's going to be expensive to acquire a center, but it might be more expensive if we don't. What do you think he's alluding to? He's alluding to the potential of
Jack
losing
Hughes.
Quinn Hughes.
Oh, no, I thought you meant bringing Jack Hughes
no,
in.
Well, no, that would solve, you know, that kills two birds with one stone.
Right, right.
But the reason it would be more expensive to not acquire a center in trade this offseason is because the cost would be potentially losing Quinn Hughes.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So he alluded to it in other ways rather than just what he said towards the end of the news conference there about Hughes. And ultimately, that's what sets up this summer to be very interesting, potentially,
yeah,
you know, franchise changing for the Vancouver Canucks, not just on Elias Pettersson front, but, you know, Jim said it and then Patrick essentially said it with us, maybe to a lesser extent. They realize they're going to have to trade something pretty significant if they truly do want to acquire the top six centermen that they covet to help this team.
Yeah, and I think based on their answers, it's pretty clear that they know how difficult this is going to be.
Yeah.
And that executing this plan is not going to be easy.
No.
And if you don't execute the plan, Quinn's gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and maybe even if you do execute the plan, Quinn might be gone if he has a desire to play with his brothers. That's what Jim alluded to.
That's what you're left to infer from what Jim Rutherford said.
Now, again, jokingly or not, a solution would be to acquire the brothers, and we joke about that. Maybe we should take it seriously. But I think it's one of those...
But it's not really realistic.
No, I mean...
It doesn't live in reality that New Jersey's going to trade those two guys.
No, not right now, at least.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if anything's happened for that. Like, the only way that happens is if the players put a lot of pressure on the organization to say, we don't want to be here.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure what reason there would be for them to do so in New Jersey.
It makes for an interesting offseason. You don't know what's going to happen with Pettersson. Even if you do the Pettersson for Larkin type thing, you're still down a center. So how are you finding that player? That's beyond Rick Tocchet and Elias Pettersson. That's the biggest question. Where are you finding this guy from? We talked to Frank Saravalli. He doesn't seem to know where they're finding this centerman. Are you looking at a young player and saying, this is our guy that we're going to build with? Does that help you get better as soon as next year? Probably not. So I'm curious how this all plays out, because they made it pretty clear their plan is to trade for a center mm-hmm. and trade a big price. You know,
they're willing to pay a price.
Much like they were with Roenick and Marcus Pettersson to help out their defense, they were willing to pay a high price at the high of market value for those players in order to get them, and they're going to be willing to do that for a top six centerman.
So would it be too much to infer that management is willing to trade anything but Quinn Hughes for the right deal?
Pretty much.
Because they said, hey, yeah, you asked about giving up prospects and picks, and they were asked about that during the media availability too, and talked about, yeah, we have to consider doing so. Like, it's not going to be cheap getting those types of players. And if you're open to trading Pettersson, which Alvin with us, we gave him another chance to shut that door, refused to shut that door. If you're willing to trade him, like, who else would you be unwilling to trade?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a single player you'd be unwilling to move. Now, clearly there are guys that are unlikely to get traded. Like, Sherwood's probably not getting traded, you know. Jake DeBrusk is probably not getting traded.
Mm-mm. He's got to score 30 next year.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, Marcus Patterson's probably not getting traded. They just signed him. I think 50, to be honest, next year for Sherwood.
I do like the first name you mentioned was Keeper Sherwood.
Clearly. I mean,
right after Quinn Hughes, Quinn Hughes Keeper Sherwood.
He's probably not getting traded. But, I mean, could you say the same about Filip Hronek? Like, I don't think Filip Hronek's getting traded, but his no trade doesn't kick in until July 1st either.
Yeah.
Because same age as Pettersson, right? Like, it kicks in next year. I mean, this July 1st, that's when the extension, his trade eligibility
kicks in.
If you
are that desperate to sign or to get a centerman, everything's on the table.
Right.
Outside of Quinn Hughes.
So, I mean, you can't say Filip Hronek's not getting traded.
Yeah.
Again, Pettersson, because they just signed him. But let's say that the unthinkable Hughes brothers package does come together. I would imagine Marcus Pettersson would have to be part of it.
Yeah.
As a left-handed D going the other way.
Mm. Wow. Or Elias Pettersson.
Well, probably both.
So, right? So you're swapping Pettersson's for Hughes's?
Pettersson's for Hughes's. Wow. Well, too many Pettersson for Hughes-I.
John Shorthouse and Brendan Batchelor are like, thank you.
But, I mean, again, we're kidding about the Hughes thing. But... To that point, though, like if that ever were to happen, there isn't a single player. It's just Quinn Hughes who's untouchable. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
This offseason. And that, to me, can set up a very intriguing offseason, a lot of fireworks, or there's no one to go after.
Yeah.
And do you get stuck like not doing much? And the other thing that stood out to me a lot here, Reach, and he even mentioned it when you asked about Besser, yeah, we may even talk to Besser after July 1st. And this is something Rutherford spoke about too, that we need to figure our wingers out, centers out first, and then we can figure out the wingers afterwards, because that'll really depend on who we have down the middle.
Yeah.
Like the priority is we're going to figure out the center ice position, and then we'll move to the wings. And if that costs us Besser, it costs us Besser. But the priority is figure out what your center is, and then we'll figure out what we're doing with our free agents or on the wing especially, and how else we're acquiring a winger.
So get ready for the Canucks to make a blockbuster trade on draft weekend.
Yeah, I mean, listen.
It's setting up for that.
Reach, as soon as
they didn't leave any stone unturned today.
No, they did. But again, we didn't learn anything new because, I mean, again, it depends on how much you trust reporting or not, right? But we mentioned as soon as they made the Pettersson trade that the focus is for them to acquire a top six impact forward.
Yes.
Preferably a center.
Yes.
They're looking for it at the deadline. They're in on Cousins. They were in on Josh Norris. Couldn't land either guy. Now that focus has only shifted to the offseason. That was their main focus. That remains their main focus. Again, it's nothing new, right? Yeah. But we can sit here and talk about that being your main focus, your main desire. A lot of teams have the same desire. Very few players available. Are you going to be able to pull the trigger?
Some of this gets figured out if Pettersson figures himself out.
But even so, like, yes, you're right. But this team had a high ceiling because you had JT and Pettersson.
Yes. So you still need to go out and acquire a center on top of Pettersson. But as Patrick Alvin alluded to today, Pettersson does have the capability of being a true number one center. But I know I'm not the only one, and I asked Patrick about this, about the disconnect from what Rutherford said and what we saw from Elias Pettersson today, or this season, I should say. When he said, Pettersson's always going to be able to get his points. No, he wasn't able to get his points this year. That is actually in conflict with how he performed this year. Defensively, he was fine. At times, he had some bad moments, but he was still solid defensively, as solid as Elias Pettersson has ever been. And they talked about becoming a more complete player, referenced Steve Yzerman in Detroit and how, you know, he had to make a decision on points or being more of a winning type player when Scotty Bowman became their head coach. And I get what you're trying to say. You're essentially saying Pettersson needs to be more of a winning player, but his failures this year weren't defensively related. They were offensively related. And then I think about the way they spoke about JT Miller and how there's five other players in the league, maybe, that are like JT. And I wonder if they want Pettersson to be something that he's not, Sat. And that's a player with a little bit more sandpaper, a little bit more traditional in the way that he plays the game, rather than the cerebral type of chess player that Pettersson can be when he's at his best.
Yeah, yes and no. But to your point, like, the answer just didn't seem congruent.
Yeah.
Like, it was just like, you're right. Like, he didn't have the points this year. Defensively, he was okay, but it's also clear based on the deployment from the head coach that he doesn't trust Pettersson as a matchup guy.
He chose even Suter to play more matchup minutes when they were both healthy after Miller was gone.
Exactly. Now, Pettersson still took a lot of defensive zone draws.
Yes.
And he always has, but he was shielded from taking the tough matchup role. So clearly, there's something in his game that the coach doesn't trust, and I think it ultimately comes down to the lack of strength. You know the comment people make a lot, he falls down on all the time? Like, I'm sure that's something that they think about.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know if he's physically strong enough to go head-to-head against the other team's top centers. I think that's how they view it. And to your point, are they asking him to be something he's not, perhaps, to some extent? But wasn't Pettersson supposed to be a two-way elite center that can go head-to-head against everybody else's best players? And that's why he was elite? He can be a point-per-game or better producer that's a Selke-caliber center. Like, isn't that also the potential we spoke about?
The version of Pettersson that helps you win a Stanley Cup is a guy who's like Kopitar, Barkov light.
Okay.
Or in that sort of class of player.
Right. So are they asking him to be something he's not, or asking him to fulfill his potential?
There is an element of they want him to be something he isn't.
Again, I don't think
the sandpaper part, I think, is something they would love to see more of in his game.
Yes, but also as I think it's strictly strength. If you don't fall over and you're stronger, like, are you worried about the sandpaper?
Yeah, maybe not.
You know what I mean? Like, if you hold your ground, do you worry about whether he gloves somebody in the face or not? yeah. ultimately.
Like just, you could throw all the reverse hits you want, but like if you get knocked over every, you know, once a shift easily off the puck, just get bullied off the puck, like you're not going to be that guy.
Yeah. And I think the other part of it is to, again, bringing it back to what you mentioned, he's still been amongst one of the league leaders this year in winning board battles.
Yeah.
He's like top 15, I think, by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he doesn't win battles either, you know, but it's, I think it's literally just a strength portion of things. But I don't think you're wrong. When you don't see a player fulfill his potential and he has such a drastic step back, you look at reasons for the player. And we know the injuries, obviously something he's talked about a lot. And then the other question is the team handling this correctly or not?
Yeah.
I think it's a fair question to ask. And I just don't know if I'm at the point of, oh yeah, they're asking him to be something he's not, or they're simply trying to get the player to fulfill who we've always thought he could be.
We're going to dive into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox, get to more of your questions, comments on today's news conferences, the interview you heard earlier with Patrick Alvin. Anything you have, let us know, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. And we'll get to a couple more things, including Lander and Thatcher Demko, among others. That's coming up in the final segment of Canucks Central.
The most opinionated Canucks show out there. Canucks Talk with Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drans. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Canucks Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Final segment of the program. Stanley Cup playoffs are on. Former Canucks are scoring goals as we speak. Anthony Beauvillier scoring a 2-0 goal for the Washington Capitals as they lead the Montreal Canadiens.
Worth the second round pick?
Yep. Already.
Got a goal. A
couple of ex-Canucks are first liners in playoff action tonight. Beauvillier playing on Washington's top line. And Andrei Kuzmenko playing on the LA Kings top line.
So Andrei
with Adrian Kempe and Anže Kopitar.
So has he found his home then?
He must have. He played really well.
He did.
Josh thinks he's a stud now.
You think he figured it
out? Well, I definitely didn't say that. I just said he gets points and he'll probably stay in the lineup for a few games.
So, okay.
High praise.
So he had 5 goals, 17 points in 22 games with the LA Kings to finish the season.
That was good. Really good.
Worth a third round pick.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Totally worth, especially down the stretch for them. And even
I don't know what it is, but like whenever he shows up to a new team, he's amazing.
Yeah, I mean he's this really talented hockey player. Yes. And then what happens is coaches be like, "Hey, can you just pay attention to these things?" And then that just everything just falls apart from that point on. Yeah. That's what's happened in every stop so far. 2.5 games over under before he gets healthy scratched.
Yeah.
Taking the under or over?
So if he's playing with Kopitar, he's getting matched up against McDavid or Draisaitl.
That's what I'm saying. Over under 2.5 games before he gets held.
Yeah, that's not going to last long against the Oilers.
I mean, so he'll get one game.
He'll play three games in the series, though. I'm going to go over.
So I think if the Kings win the first game,
he'll play game two.
He'll definitely play game two, and he probably gets a third game.
Yeah.
If they lose the first game and he gets moved off the top line, goes to the fourth line, and they lose game two, he's out.
Yeah. It feels like a classic, because I think Tanner Janot's hurt, so maybe that affects the situation and keeps him in the lineup. But it's one of those things, like, if you can't play him in a top six situation, then there's no point of having Kuzmenko in your lineup.
No, I mean, especially in the playoffs when, you know, all the things you need to do. But and somebody here says Kings don't ask him to be something he's not. I don't know if that's true. You know what I mean? Like, ultimately what it's going to come down to is, like, Are you going to be in the right spot when we need you to be in the right spot and make the right decisions in critical times? Like, that's what it comes down to. And that's not a talking thing. That was also what happened with Boudreaux. That's also what happened with him in Calgary. And his stint in Philly was too short to make any sort of, you know, assertions based off of. But, you know, that's been the theme with him, right?
In my head, I just made the correlation. Like, thinking about how Rick Tocchet used to speak about Andrei Kuzmenko and how he's been speaking about Elias Pettersson lately.
Oh, now you're saying the same thing?
Tocchet would be like, he's a good kid. He really wants to learn. He really wants to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's been saying about Pettersson lately.
He wants to figure it out.
Interesting.
Ricci's on his pessimistic train today.
You know, Dan Consparicchio is just like the feelings are just rolling around in my head right now.
Every team is the Blue Jays to yeah. Ricci.
Dan Pessimoso, is that what we say? Is that No.
That was such a sad shake of the head.
He's like, no.
Yeah. Maybe the Jays can hit a home run. That would make me a little bit
happier.
They're
12-2. Like, they have a winning record, and Reach acts like their
they're
season
not 12
is...
and 2.
Oh, sorry, 12 and 10. 12 and 10. Sorry.
What Blue Jays are you watching?
I know. They're two games over 500. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah. And Vladdy and Bo have combined for one home run.
And how likely do you think it is that they're going to be hitting at such a futile home run pace the rest of the season, Reach?
You know, probably not forever.
Well, there's your answer.
Think and they're 12-10. You would feel if it was forever.
And they're 12-10 with neither guy hitting home runs. They have three home runs between them.
Yeah.
When you include Santander.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Reach is always like Santander stinks.
You know when I turned off the game yesterday when the Jays had five hits with runners in scoring position and only three runs.
Yeah.
It's like, how did that even happen? Yeah, that seems very difficult to do.
But they've been good with runners in scoring position so far this year. They've been cashing them in.
Define good.
Well, they've been cashing them in.
Yeah, one single at a time.
But, man.
It's very...
it's like they scored, but how do they score?
It's very sustainable. Runs, damn it. There's a reason everybody else tries to hit home runs.
Reach about the Blue Jays is just half of Canucks Twitter time.
For sure. How Canucks
so
fans
Canucks
like.
Twitter, to make the correlation and the segue, Canucks Twitter is like, why haven't they signed Willander yet? There's something wrong. There's something off with this. They should figure it out. And they probably should. But what's going on with Tom Willander? We've heard from Patrick Alvin. He essentially said, they told us he's going back to school. And then the agent came out and told Rick Dolly, well, that's not necessarily the case.
Yeah.
Frank Saravalli said he's probably turning pro, whether that's somewhere in Europe or with the Canucks next year. What's the situation here with Tom Willander? Is this really just a negotiation? Is that what you see?
I think a lot of it is negotiation, unless the player truly doesn't have a desire to sign with the Canucks. I think that would explain a lot of things if that was the case. But every indication we get is it's not the case.
Yeah.
Like and that's what makes this perplexing. Because the agent came out and said today, like, you know, we're negotiating a contract. He wants, like, the plan is to turn pro.
Yeah.
He may have to go back to college or go pro elsewhere, but the plan was to sign with the Canucks.
Yeah.
And it's really strange for them to be this this caught up in the bonuses. And Frank is right. Like, it counts against the cap. Now, it counts against the cap, but at the end of the day, the accounting by the end of the season depends on whether you reached it or not.
Yes.
And I think you can also go over the cap a certain amount, but then you get a tag to the next year. Mm-hmm. And if you hit all the performance bonuses, those get tagged to the following season. So, like, yes and no.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Ultimately, this should not be a reason why you don't get a deal done. Now, I get it from a
Schedule A bonus is like, you're going to win the Norris. Here's $750,000.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about here?
All-Star Game MVP, or like you're getting 0.5 points per 0.5
or
points
the Ryan
per game.
Leonard, like you're going to win the Conn Smythe.
Or something along. Yeah, stuff like that. It's like you're making All-Star team, being a all NHL star.
Yeah,
and
the chances of Willander making the All-Star team when he plays on the same team as Quinn Hughes are like next to nothing.
No, 100%, you're right. And that's why...
How many defensemen make the All-Star game anyways these days?
And that's what makes this so strange. At the same time, there's a reason why players don't get those bonuses unless they get drafted really high. That's just the way it works with ELCs. Yeah. You know, it sounds dumb to us, but that's how it works. And I think right now, both sides are dug in.
Yeah.
I think the Canucks are very much dug in because they look at it as, and it's pretty clear, that they have an internal structure on these things. And Lekker-Mäki followed the internal structure with his contract and similar range that he was drafted in. And that they're only going to give those types of bonuses to players that are drafted higher.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, are you gonna ruin the player's the relationship with the player? And one thing that we do know is players coming out of college do have more leverage.
Yeah.
So they are somewhat exceptions when you're talking about traditional ELCs with other players coming off of coming out of Europe or coming through the CHL ranks, for instance. You don't have the same pressures that a player that can go to college does. So that drives up their leverage anyways. And I think the Canucks are still operating under like, hey, these are our lines. Alvin made it seem like they've moved when he spoke to us, because I asked him, like, why are these bonuses getting in the way? These are hard to attain anyway, just as you outlined. And he said, like, we're trying.
Yeah.
Have you tried hard enough? I guess the agent would say no.
Mm-hmm.
But it is dumb if this ends up with him not signing over Schedule A bonuses.
Yeah.
Bonuses he's more than likely not ever going to attain.
Yeah. It makes you wonder what else is on the mind of the Willander camp right now. But as Mike, the urologist from Brockville, says, this Willander thing is infuriating. It's like, how can I expect the team to hit a home run in the offseason when they can't even hit a single at the top of the lineup? Bo from Burnaby, Willander is part of the trade package this summer. No need to hand him a contract.
I mean,
hey, all thoughts and but here's opinions the thing. Are welcome on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox.
But here's the thing. He becomes easier to move. The value is better if he's signed.
Yeah, the value is better if he's signed.
No, you don't need to, like, because if he's not signed, he still has leverage to never sign.
Yes.
You know, like, if he's signed, it's like, hey, you're here. Unless you don't want to play NHL hockey.
Yeah. Well, and it's clear that he's trying to get leverage for whatever reason, I guess the bonuses to get to be more in his favor, because at first it was, well, he'd consider going back to school, and now it's like, well, he'd consider playing pro in Sweden for the next couple of years. So the goalposts are moving a little bit in the negotiation, it seems as like. But we'll see what happens with Tom Vilander. The goaltending situation. It was interesting to hear Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin make it clear that they can see a future with Thatcher Demko here in Vancouver. They really like where their goaltending is. Didn't sound like a front office that's getting ready to trade Thatcher Demko.
No, and at the same time, I think they'll listen to anything, you know, like we mentioned before. And he made the point about the condensed schedule next season.
Yeah.
And whether they trade Demko or not, they're going to have another reliable goalie here next year. It's pretty clear, right? Like, they need to have two goalies here. And as good as Tolopolo was in the one game and one period he played,
you can't. I mean, Shelovs was pretty good in the playoffs last year. Exactly. What did that mean for regular season hockey?
Yeah, and maybe Shelovs will figure it out one day, right? Mm-hmm. But nobody feels confident about anybody internally outside of Lankinen if Demko is gone to play NHL games. Like, be the backup or 1B even, no. Right?
You're so, like, thinking about going to sign Jake Allen if you lose Demko, right?
So that's my takeaway too, and maybe it was obvious, but if Demko's not coming back, like, they know they need two goalies next season.
Yeah. And that makes it a little bit complicated. I know, you know, what Jim Rutherford said, it's pretty much exactly how you would think a potential contract negotiation goes with Thatcher Demko this summer. It's like, you know, we're taking on some risk giving you a long-term deal here or any kind of a term deal, given your injury history. You're going to have to take some risk in potentially leaving some money on the table that you might be able to attain if you regain your Vezina form in this upcoming year.
So Demko obviously signed a contract that ended up being below market value for him because of how he outperformed the deal at $5 million per season. And he's now going to be 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is he willing to bet on himself for 1 year, given his history, and then try to get a deal with term and free agency or perhaps at the end of the season from the Canucks?
Yeah.
Which would be 5 years plus. And I'm not even sure anybody will give him 7 years, even a free agency, but let's just say for argument's sake, 5+ years. Is he willing to do that if he has 3 years or even 4 years, $8 million per season in front of him?
Yeah.
So anywhere from 24 to 32 million? Because
it would be hard to say no to that.
I think you have to go Allmark. Did Allmark get 5 years?
Yeah, I think he got
4 or 5.
Zach, he got Zach, 5 years, right?
Four?
I thought he got 4x8.
4x8, there you go. I think the 4x8, I'm not even sure, would the Canucks go 4?
Yeah.
But that one he may not be able to say no to, but like, would he bet
on
himself?
If it's 8 million, how do you say no to that?
It's 4x8.25 specifically for Allmark.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you have to go higher than that? 8.5.
I can't imagine you have to go higher than that.
Allmark won a Vezina.
Coming off the year that
won a Vezina,
coming off the year that Demko just had, the only reason you're going even matching that is because the salary cap is going up.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're Demko, if you're not, and we asked Alvin, like, how much of this is, you know, term, and I think they essentially said it's term because you're not getting Demko signed on a short term deal of the AAV $6 million or something. It's just not happening. You know, it's going to have to be 7.5+.
Yes.
You know, like it's when it's going to have to be. Would he sign a 3-year deal? I don't know. 4, probably, but are the Canucks willing to go to 4?
Yeah.
given Demko's record, how confident would you guys be to give Demko a four-year deal? Give him the Allmark deal. Would you, Josh?
I'd do it. My whole thing this offseason has been like about finding an upside, though.
Yeah.
And I think your most ultimate upside in that is Demko figuring it out, being healthy. And him at 4 years, 8.25, your tandem being locked up. Like, I think you would have the best tandem in the league potentially over the next 4 years.
Well, and because goalie prospects are basically magic beans. So,
yeah. I mean, it's
they are such a hard position to figure out. I mean, Dustin Wolf was what? Basically Mr. Irrelevant in the draft.
Yeah, and look at him what he is now.
Yeah.
And you see players be thought of very highly and then never figure it out. Yeah. Others take forever. It's
Mackenzie Blackwood's
position.
Taken like 10 years to figure it out, right? Yeah.
No, I know.
And he's finally done it with Colorado.
Yeah.
So when you have two guys that you feel pretty comfortable with, it's hard to walk away from that. At the same time, you know, the Canucks are in a pretty precarious position because they don't have enough forwards to field a competitive hockey team. So,
well, I mean, yeah. I mean, they need the higher-end guys. I mean, that's what it comes back down to here, right? And, you know, on the Demko front, it's going to be fascinating what happens with Demko. But are they willing to go 4 years? Mm-hmm. I just keep looking at the Allmark deal being kind of like, is that something he would do? And are the Canucks even interested in going that far?
Yeah. I would say... like 4 years, I would be open to it.
But that means the next 5 years, this is your goalie tandem.
Yeah.
It's Demko and Lankinen.
Yeah.
That's a real good tandem.
Yeah. But I mean, you locked in for 5 years. The next 5 years, that's it. And maybe you you can live with the risk on Demko because you have Lankinen.
Yeah.
And then you have time to develop the guys coming. That maybe you have somebody emerge in the next little while there, right?
The biggest issue I would have with it is not this upcoming season, but if, you know, a Demko extension kicks in at $8 million per, right? And you've already got Lankinen at $4.5 million. That's $12.5 million against the cap. Mm-hmm. It's going to be more than 10% of the cap on your goaltending. Plus, you have the $4 million penalty, almost $5 million penalty for Oliver Ekman-Larsson. So,
but it's 1 year, right? Because next year
is 1 year you're going to have to swallow it.
Yeah, because I mean, the OEL increase kicks in this year, right?
Yeah, for the next two seasons.
Next two seasons, right? So it's 2 years of dealing with it. Because next year he's under the $5 million contract anyways.
Yeah, so you're spending, what I'm saying is you're spending above what league average would be on goaltending. Mm-hmm. Percentage of the cap wise, plus you already got this penalty, so you're kind of limiting your spending on the other areas of your roster.
Yeah, you are. At the same time, how hard is it to get elite players, right? And as much as you would love to have this balanced team where you can spread out the elite players throughout your lineup, do you worry too much about where you're getting the wins from, so to speak?
Yeah.
You know, like, and I think that's part of it too. It's like, ideally, you like to spread it out more, but if we're spending this premium, we better have the best tandem in the league.
Yeah.
And we feel like we might have one of the best tandems in the league. Is it worth paying a premium for top five goaltending reliably for 5 years?
Yeah.
I'd say yes. Yeah,
it is.
It is. But I mean, how confident are you? And again, it comes down to Demko's health. That's what's going to determine whether that works or not. Can he stay healthy?
I'm just not confident he can stay healthy.
That's the thing. That to me is the question. Like, I don't mind.
I don't question his talent.
No, and I don't question the desire and the idea of spending a premium on the most important position in hockey, which is goaltending.
Yeah.
Like, I have no issues with that. It's more about, can that work? I have no problem spending the money. I have no issues with committing that much on the cap. But is this the tandem you feel good doing that with? And ultimately, Reach, are the Canucks in a position where they have no choice but to make this bet?
Yeah. No choice.
Because, I mean, so the Canucks are in pursuit of finding another top-end center, right? And we talk about how they need another impact winger as well, right? Can you be in the pursuit for an elite winger, elite center, and an elite goalie and get that done in 2 years?
Probably not. That's too much.
So are you kind of backed into that corner where...
Well, at least you have the elite goalie already. Potential for the elite goalie.
For 1 year, right?
So you need to bank on that. You like bank on Demko, and you kind of have to bet on his health.
Right, because you have to... You can't have so many things you're trying to fill, right? Like, there's only so much you can do.
Well, they need three forwards. Not that Jim Rutherford was explicitly saying they need three forwards, but he explicitly said that they need three forwards.
That was just a number he pulled out of his hat.
But it's obvious, though, guys. Look at it this way. I mean, Suter and Besser they have to be replaced.
Yes.
And they've been wanting to add. So they wanted
to
keep
those
guys.
So you want another center plus you got, yeah, you want another center plus you got to replace Suter and Besser.
That's three. It's right there.
Yeah. So, okay. So if you need an elite center, elite winger, and let's say just for this argument, they keep Demko, you probably have to trade for the center. And can you find a winger in free agency?
Again, your best chance is the elite center is already in your organization.
Yeah. Well, even a second line center is going to cost a lot.
I meant top of Pedersen.
Yeah. You maybe don't need an elite center, but you need a good center.
A very good one.
Yeah, very good
center. So let's say a good center and a really good winger.
Yeah.
And now you need to find an elite goalie, too. You want to add that to the list?
Yeah. No, so I don't. I really don't.
So I think Demko is coming back next year, most likely, because we just went through this process, the logic of it all. And ultimately, they may feel like they have to sign him because that's just something that they have to cross off the list.
Yeah.
And this might be your best bet. And if you're not going to be able to find that real elite level talent elsewhere, can you afford to let on a potential elite piece like Demko go, despite it being fraught with peril because of his injury history?
The talking to Demko as early as you can, I think, helps. Maybe you're taking more risk, but if you wait until the season and you to see how he fares during the year, maybe you're not able to get him at the 4x8 contract after he's, started as one of the stars of the month in October, or starts to put more on paper that he's rediscovered his form. That's something you don't really want to see. To the text message inbox.
Yeah, somebody says you guys make great argument for Lafreniere and playing him at center. If they get a winger playing as a center potentially, and we brought this up before. I know there are people around the league that do believe Lafreniere can be a center.
Mm-hmm.
Are those people in the Canucks organization? I can't say that with certainty, but I do know there are people. And even Lafreniere himself, when he came into the league, there was talk about whether he's a center or winger, and he had a desire to play down the middle and ultimately thought it was best to start off playing the wing. I don't mind that idea, Reach.
Yeah.
Swing for the fences, and we'll see ultimately where it ends up going here with who's available. But the idea of going after a Lafreniere type, a 23-year-old who has oodles of potential, that even if he doesn't end up being the center, he can still be an elite winger for you. I don't mind a bet like that and trying it. And especially with Hedl, he's probably not going anywhere. And if Pedersen is staying here, I don't mind giving it a go in that sense. I think you have to make a risk. You have to take a risk somewhere, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to take a big risk somewhere.
Yeah, and you're probably not going to find a perfect solution. So which imperfect solution are you willing to bet on? And I think that's going to be a big question this offseason. And are you willing to bypass high-end potential for the right specific position?
Yeah. It's one of the conundrums. I think you need the centerman. They made it so clear that they need the centerman.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I'm just saying, it's one of those things where we can sit here and talk about what you want.
Yeah. And there's not a ton of, not that there's not a ton of confidence in Filip Hedl. They said nice things, but ultimately.
So, but how about this though, right? Let's say that hypothetical, they trade for Lafreniere.
Yeah.
You let Besser walk. And then do you sign Suter?
Probably.
And then you say, okay, we can try Laf down the middle. And if he's not the guy, hey, at least we know we can go to Suter. We got Suter, Hedl, and Pedersen.
Yeah.
And yeah, okay.
And Lafreniere have played together before.
Yeah. Right. And maybe you don't solve the center thing, but can you kick the can down the road a little bit here?
Yeah.
And still add to your talent level.
Might be what you have to do.
Right. And you're adding potentially an elite piece who's young. And I think that's something to keep an eye on too, that if they are able to find something, it's going to impact whether they can keep Besser or Suter. And Suter's, I think, really dependent on whether they find the right center or not.
Stan Riccio, Satyar Shah, back tomorrow at 4:00 here on Canucks Central. Lots to get into as the Canucks offseason of change is upon us. We'll also get more into the Stanley Cup playoffs as they happen. For producers Josh and Zach, my co-host Sat, I am Dan. You've been listening to Canucks Central.